everyone, welcome back to my channel, or welcome if you're new here. My name is Madison and I make video essays about pop culture and trending topics online. I'm also a singer and a songwriter, so if you liked that intro music, then you can stream it on all platforms that you can get your music from. Links are in the description. Today we are discussing the reclamation of Black Americana and Western aesthetics. In the past few years, there's been a resurgence of Americana Western themes in the United States, from fashion to music to movies, and you could argue that's just the resurgence of conservatism in the United States. However, there's been a very strong presence of Black Americans in this space. Recently, there's been a continuous theme of Black Americans reclaiming our history as Americans and our contributions to Americana and Western culture. Of course, the most obvious example being Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter album that just came out last year. Even more recently, we see this in Ryan Coogler's cinematic masterpiece, Sinners. I absolutely love that movie. You should definitely go see it if you haven't. And to me, that movie just screams historical reclamation, in my opinion. And even just last week, we kind of saw it in the Met Gala theme, which was super fine, tailoring Black style, a celebration of Black dandyism and the history of Black menswear. The actual Met exhibit was divided into 12 different sections that encompass the Black dandy: ownership, presence, distinction, disguise, freedom, champion, respectability, juke, heritage, beauty, cool, and cosmopolitanism, which clearly emphasizes the idea of celebration and reclamation of Black cultural contributions. Although the concept of Black dandyism and tailoring spans across the entire diaspora, America has a huge presence in this aesthetic and its contributions and influence. The museum explains how Black style has evolved for 300 years and is rooted in the idea of Black dandyism, which was birthed by the intersection of African and European style traditions. During the style's origins in the 18th century, there was more access to clothing and goods as a result of the transatlantic slave trade. And the theme itself was inspired by Monica L. Miller's 2009 book, Slaves to Fashion: Black Dandyism and the Styling of Black Diasporic Identity. And lastly, the museum included photos of civil rights activists like W.E. Du Bois, writings by Zora Neale Hurston and Nikki Giovanni, and archival pieces from leaders in Black media like Jet Magazine, clothing worn by pioneers in Black history like Frederick Douglass and Andre Leon Talley. I'm not going to dive too deep into Sinners because I do want to make a video talking more in depth about the movie and vampires and all that fun stuff, but if you watch the movie, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. That movie is honestly like a time capsule of that time period, and it was really beautifully done. But anyways, aside from Sinners and the Met Gala, of course, Black musicians have had a huge past few years when it comes to country music. Like I previously mentioned, Cowboy Carter was a huge moment in this cultural renaissance. We also saw other Black musicians shine in the country music space, like Lil Nas X with his song Old Town Road back in 2019, as well as Shaboozey, who had a number one country hit with a bar song Tipsy. It actually charted at number one on Billboard's Hot Country Songs as it succeeded Beyoncé's Texas Hold'em at the top. This was the first time in history that two Black artists held the number one position there in consecutive weeks. The singer Momo, whose song So American had a moment on TikTok recently, actually inspired me to make this video because it just seems like more and more we're seeing Black Americans embrace our culture in a different way that we're not used to seeing. However, Momo, similar to other artists that I mentioned, have been met with some backlash, and there's been controversy around this cultural renaissance, I'm calling it, because it's kind of foreign or even off-putting to a lot of Black Americans to see ourselves represented in this way, since we're just not used to it. Like I said, it's very foreign, and for very specific reasons that we will get into in this video. Today's video is sponsored by Calm. As someone who prioritizes both their mental and physical health, Calm is an amazing app that helps me stay grounded and well-rested. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Dealing with stress and anxiety or trouble sleeping can be really challenging, but thankfully, you don't have to do it alone. Calm has got you covered with meditations, grounding exercises, exercises, sleep stories, sleep meditations, and calming music. As a part of my wellness routine slash post-workout ritual, I like to meditate after getting out of the sauna, so Calm fits perfectly into my daily routine. I really enjoy the Tune Into the Moment meditation by Jeff Warren, and when I'm looking for a more active mindfulness practice, I like to listen to the Mindful Walking Meditation by Tamara Levitt. So if you'd like to add some more mindfulness into your life or get better sleep, check out Calm. Stress less, sleep more, and live better with Calm. For all of my viewers, Calm is offering a 40% off discount for premium Calm subscriptions at calm.com/Madison. That's calm.com/Madison for 40% off a Calm premium subscription. Although historically Black people have been major contributors to the creation of country music, Black people are not typically associated with or welcome in this kind of space. My dad used to always say, whenever we heard country music, we knew to run in the opposite direction. And I think a lot of Black Americans share this same sentiment. It's not common to meet a Black person who absolutely loves country music or is running to a rodeo or line dancing competition or whatever. Seeing a Black person in a cowboy hat waving a American flag on a horse loud and proud just seems wrong in some ways. And it's not just because of the cowboy hat or the cowboy imagery, it's the American flag, the patriotism of it all. Because how can you be patriotic as a Black person in America considering the horrific history? Which on the surface makes a lot of sense and has validity. However, I think there is more to the story. So is it possible to be a Black American and to be proud of your nationality? Can you proudly wave the American flag knowing the atrocities that have occurred in this country? Can you claim your nationality, claim that American identity while also being aware of what has come before you? Is it propaganda? Is it nationalism? Or is it simply reclamation? Let's get into it, okay? So Americana is actually like artifacts. Americana artifacts are related to the history, geography, folklore, and cultural heritage of the United States of America. Americana is any collection of materials and things concerning or characteristic of the United States or of the American people, and is representative or even stereotypical of American culture as a whole. And so when you put Black in front of the word America, you can assume what that means. Black Americana are essentially Black American artifacts, figures, collectibles that depict Black people. However, there is an emphasis on the stereotype. Black Americana is considered highly offensive and is deeply rooted in racism. Black Americana memorabilia, sometimes called Black Americana, describes objects and ephemera relating to African American and Afro-European history. Most of this material was produced from the 18th through the 20th centuries. Frequently, these household items reflect racist ideas about Black people through offensive and dehumanizing caricatures. However, Black memorabilia also encompasses objects with positive connotations commemorating civil rights advancements or achievements by scholars, artists, musicians, athletes, politicians, and other members of the Black community. I think the topic of actual physical Americana can help us segue into the meaning of reclamation. What is it actually? How have Black Americans approached it throughout time? Because just like, you know, we're talking about reclaiming country music and our history with Western culture, Black Americans for years have actually practiced reclamation by collecting some of these items. Like I just said, a lot of these collectibles are rooted in racism. This includes caricatured objects, advertisements, and memorabilia portraying Black people in dehumanizing ways that were created mostly during the Jim Crow era. And you're probably thinking, why would you want to have these items in your house as a Black person? But a lot of Black collectors often collect and preserve these items to reclaim our history, not to necessarily celebrate it. Nearly half of all collectors are African Americans themselves who value the historical and cultural significance of these items and believe they are worth preserving. The goal when it comes to preserving these items is to educate and not to endorse. Dr. David Pilgrim of the Jim Crow Museum says, "Items of intolerance can be used to teach tolerance. This act act of collecting is considered an act of resistance to historical erasure. It's similar to how Holocaust museums exist, and they preserve anti-Semitic propaganda to show how discrimination escalates into atrocity. Black collectors use racist Americana to document the mechanisms of systemic racism in the United States. Dr. Pilgrim also says, "I am a garbage collector. Racist garbage." And he goes on to say that he does this work because he believes in it, not necessarily because he enjoys it. And I think that is the duty of, you know, historians and people who preserve these sorts of items. It's important to not let this part of history go unnoticed or to be forgotten about and erased. It's like how people say, you know, we have to talk about the past so we don't repeat the past. And I think it's probably better for this kind of stuff to be in the hands of Black people rather than just letting it, you know, fall into the hands of the wrong folks, if you know what I'm trying to say. Anyways, there are a lot of prominent Black figures who actually are known collectors of these items, like Oprah Winfrey, Whoopi Goldberg, and Spike Lee. And so this quite literally is an act of reclamation. Reclaiming can be defined as the process of claiming something back or reasserting a right to demand or obtain the return of or to regain possession of, essentially, you know, taking back what is rightfully ours. Sometimes reclamation can be misused for reappropriation, like, you know, taking back a slur to switch its meaning to like a term of endearment, like the N-word. But in this case, I would say this is reclamation because you are quite literally like taking items for yourself that are connected to your roots, your ancestry, etc. But I guess in some way, it is almost reappropriating the object as a form of empowerment in the sense of like, you know, you're taking your history into your own hands and using this piece of history to tell the story of the Black experience in this country. Anyways, moving on, I want to talk about cowboys, specifically Black cowboys. So when you hear the word cowboy, I'm sure what comes to your mind is a white guy on a horse with a cowboy hat, a John Wayne type of cowboy, essentially. And although most popular Western films depict cowboys as white men, most actual cowboys were Black or Native American or Mexican. So the idea of a cowboy as depicted in Western media is actually quite whitewashed. Despite their absence in popular culture, historians estimate that 25% of cowboys were African American. Enslaved people in Texas learned cattle during the Civil War, while white ranchers went off to fight in the war. After emancipation, these skills made freedmen invaluable as paid cowhands. Being a cowboy was one of the few jobs open to Black men of color who didn't want to be elevator operators or delivery boys, says William Lauren Katz. Although Black cowboys experienced racism in the towns, on the trail, however, they were met with camaraderie and respect because survival depended on the cooperation of everybody. Cowboys couldn't stop in the middle of a stampede to sort out who's Black and who's white. People like Nat Love, Bose Iyengar, and Bill Pickett are a few notable figures in the world of cowboys. Nat Love was a former slave turned legendary cowboy known for roping, riding, and sharpshooting. Bose Iyengar inspired the character Josh Dietz in Lonesome Dove and was praised by his employer for his loyalty and bravery. And Bill Pickett invented bulldogging, a rodeo technique still used today. However, with the rise of the railroad for transportation, the invention of barbed wire for containment, and forced relocation of Native Americans, the open range era came to an end, pushing many Black cowboys into other labor-based roles. As cowboy mythology grew within the Wild West TV shows and films in Hollywood, Black cowboys were written out of the narrative, replaced by the, again, whitewashed John Wayne archetype. I don't know about y'all, but I didn't realize that there were Black cowboys until I was probably like in middle school or high school. It's just not something people talk about very often because they just simply, cowboys are not depicted like that. Interestingly enough, the term cowboy was actually a racist diminutive, which when you really think about it, it's like, okay, I see how that happened. The white cowboys were considered cow hands. That was like the proper term, and the Black ones were called cowboys. But nonetheless, the term stays, but the people did not, and we just called them all cowboys. You know, it makes sense too because a lot of cowboys were previously slaves. So, of course, they had to make a distinction between the white workers and the black ones. As the black cowboy archetype and narrative evolved and black people trickled away from it, popular media, from advertisements, films, postcards even, cemented the image of the white cowboy as the ideal settler, as a symbol of masculinity and machismo and dominance and most importantly whiteness. Scholar Darrell M. Callier describes this as a cultural amnesia perpetuated by colonialism to erase marginalized history. Ryan Coogler, if you're watching this, I'm begging you to please make a black cowboy movie. I think that would do numbers in the box office. I would be first in line to see that, and I think you would do a great job. I'm saying this like he's watching. Subscribe! The genre of country music emerged from a blend of African, European, and indigenous music traditions. Basically, every aspect of country, from instrumentation to repertoire to vocal stylings, owes a debt to African and African American culture. The banjo actually has African origins. The banjo, now symbolic of white country music, is descended from West African lutes brought by enslaved people. It became central to slave music before being appropriated through minstrel shows and blackface performances.
In the slavery days, a talented musician was taught to play the fiddle so he could entertain at plantation dances. After emancipation, many of these fiddlers kept their instruments, developed their own fiddling styles and their own battery of tunes, and created an entire tradition of fiddle and banjo music.
And similar to rock and roll, country has its fair share of borrowed or stolen songs from the black community, such as some early hillbilly music that was adapted slave spirituals, field songs, and hymns, like a black minister's hymn, which turned into Carter Family's hit, which then evolved into Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. Then we get into the 20s and 30s, where we start to see some cross-racial collaborations. Despite segregation, black and white musicians often recorded together, like Jimmy Rogers and Louis Armstrong on Blue Yodel No. 9. And during this time, the recording industry had something called race records, essentially the musical manifestation of segregation. In the 1920s, record labels created race records for black artists and hillbilly music for white audiences, despite both drawing from shared sounds. And again, similar to rock music, I actually have a video called Why Black People Love Paramore, where I talk about some of the history of rock and roll and the contributions of black Americans in that genre. But similar to rock and roll, like people like Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash, country music also has country legends that were highly influenced by black artists. Leslie Riddle influenced the Carter Family's sound, Rufus T. Todd Payne mentored Hank Williams, Arnold Schultz inspired Bill Monroe, also known as the father of bluegrass. And of course, these black pioneers were erased from country music while their white protégés became on to be country music icons. You can't talk about country music or black country music without talking about DeForest Bailey. He's known as the forgotten star of country. He was a grandson of a slave and was a harmonica virtuoso and the first black star of country music. Despite his role in launching the Grand Ole Opry, he was later sidelined and erased from country music's mainstream narrative. If you're not familiar with the Grand Ole Opry, it's a music venue in Nashville, also a live country music radio broadcast. Every aspiring and major country artist has performed there pretty much. Dolly Parton's performed there, Carrie Underwood's performed there, Taylor Swift, even Elvis. The list goes on. And to this day, of course, we know that black Americans still struggle to be recognized within the country music space due to racism, from Confederate flags at concerts to a resistance to black artists in general, reflect how country music is still viewed as a kind of whites-only party.
Didn't somebody tell you this was an all-white party, huh?
Beyoncé's 2016 performance at the Country Music Awards is an example of this, also known as the inspiration for Cowboy Carter. She performed with the Dixie Chicks, and it was met with a lot of backlash and controversy because of her lack of country music credentials. It was racism. We all know that. Those white folks did not want to see that black girl on stage singing country songs. So even in 2016, Beyoncé, who was highly established as a musical icon, was not accepted by white country fans despite her Southern origins. I believe that performance was even kind of like suppressed or like pushed away in some way. Country Music Awards wouldn't promote the clips of her performance to advertise the show. Yeah, it was just a hot mess. But thankfully, we got Cowboy Carter out of that. So, you know, you win some, you lose some, I guess.
So Shaboozey was nominated for two CMA Awards, Best New Artist and Song of the Year for A Bar Song. You know it. But he left the awards empty-handed.
He has one of the longest reigning number ones in the history of the Billboard charts, and he didn't win a single award at the Country Music Awards.
But it's not that he got snubbed by the CMAs that has people side-eyeing the industry. It's what happened during the show that's fueling all of the shady allegations.
I tell you, this is for this cowboy who's been kicking Shaboozey for a lot of years, y'all, Cody Johnson.
But Shaboozey took the high road and took to social media by saying, "Ain't nobody kicking me."
Lil Nas X also faced criticism and backlash for his song Old Town Road, and it was actually removed from the charts because it wasn't country enough. I mean, black people have been at odds with country for a long time, despite our history with it. There's actually a strong history with minstrel shows and country music. Minstrelsy shaped early country. Blackface performances carried racist stereotypes into early country entertainment, embedding white supremacy into the genre's foundations. The legacy of minstrel shows, where white performers in blackface mocked black culture and black people, directly influenced early country music styles and aesthetics. Jimmy Rogers and the Blue Yodel, for example. Rogers, known as the father of country music, popularized the Blue Yodel style, which was heavily inspired by African-American blues traditions, and his performances blended blues rhythms with minstrel style entertainment, reflecting both appropriation and erasure. It's amazing what white people can do. White artists borrowed freely black musical forms, but were celebrated as pioneers, while black musicians were excluded from commercial success in country. And the minstrel traditions didn't just mock black people, it also reinforced the idea that black music was entertainment for white audiences, setting the stage for the future genre of segregation. Anyways, with all that being said, can we really blame black people for not wanting to be a part of country Western culture? No. In general, there's kind of like a cognitive dissonance that I think happens with a lot of black Americans when it comes to our identity. Du Bois talks a lot about this and describes it as double consciousness. In The Souls of Black Folk, he talks about the internal conflict experienced by subordinated or colonized groups in an oppressive society. For Black Americans, it's the sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of a society that devalues you, being both African and American, yet not fully accepted as either. Black Americans are forced to navigate being American while simultaneously being treated as outsiders within their own country. Maybe slightly off topic, but this is kind of why I get irritated when non-Americans, like Europeans for example, trash Americans and American culture, because truly we are not all the same, we don't all look the same, and we don't even all necessarily have the same culture. This idea that all Americans are entitled and act this way just isn't true. Black people, not in my perspective, have an entitled attitude. We are actively trying to take back any sort of entitlement or claim that we have, if that makes sense. Like, it's just not accurate to describe any group as all the same, but especially Americans. And to me, when I hear that stuff, it does feel like, you know, we are constantly in separation or being pushed out of like Americans and who is American, what it means to be American. There's this guy on TikTok who lives in China and he speaks Chinese and he talks to a lot of Chinese people in his videos. And I remember seeing one video where the taxi driver was like, "Oh, you're American? Like, I thought only white people lived in America." And so that just goes to show you, like, there is a very specific image of what an American is, and it's not us. Anyways, back to the topic at hand. Double consciousness isn't just marginalization, it's also heightened awareness. Black Americans see both the reality of America's promises and its hypocrisies more clearly than those who benefit unquestionably by the system. That kind of makes me think of like the idea of the American dream. I think as Americans in general, we know that the American dream is outdated, and I think Black Americans especially question, like, was that even real? or maybe it's real for some, but not for all. After the Egyptian and Indian, the Greek and Roman, the Teuton and Mongolian, the Negro is a sort of seventh son born with a veil and gifted with second sight in the American world, a world which yields him no true self-consciousness, but only lets him see himself through the revelation of the other world. It is a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two reconciled strivings, two warring ideals, and one dark body whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. I really resonate with that, and again, going back to the topic of traveling, I feel like every time I talk to someone abroad who's not American, this always comes up in my mind because America has such a strong representation. And I remember when I recently went to Japan, I was talking to someone about this because, you know, I am not embarrassed to be American. I don't have shame about being American. I cannot help where I was born. And if anything, I have a sense of pride of being a American, but specifically a Black American. I do not claim a lot of aspects of American culture as a whole. When it comes to Black Americans, what we've done for our country, for the world, what we have contributed, I am very prideful of that, and I'm not embarrassed of that at all. So there is like this kind of dual identity or dual perspective on America, being American and what that really means. He goes on to say, he simply wishes to make it possible for a man to be both a Negro and an American without being cursed and spit upon by his fellows, without having the doors of opportunity closed roughly in his face. You know, every year on 4th of July, I'm like, yes, fireworks. I'm singing Fireworks by Katy Perry just like the rest of them. And at the same time, I'm also going on my annual tirade about what does it mean to be free? This is not my Independence Day, for my people were not free on July 4th, 1776. You know, like it happens every year like clockwork as I'm shoveling funnel cake down my throat. It's just the duality of Black American man, of Black American woman. You know what I'm trying to say? Speaking of which, what to the slave is the 4th of July? Something I'm saying every year. No, but Frederick Douglass talks about this. He says, your high independence only reveals the immeasurable distance between us. The blessings in which you this day rejoice are not enjoyed in common. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. This is actually the first time I have read this was through this research, but I swear to God, I've literally said on the 4th of July, I've turned to a white person gone, it's y'all's freedom day, not mine. It's freedom for y'all, not for me. Anyways, Juneteenth. Anyways, there seems to be a clear divide between Black people when it comes to embracing the American identity or pushing back on it and not claiming it at all. Some Black Americans choose to claim American identity and its ideals because, after all, we did build this country and we deserve to be a part of it just like everybody else. In addition, Black Americans claim a unique blend of African and American identity through traditions and cultural outputs like Juneteenth, various music genres such as gospel, jazz, blues, hip-hop, etc., soul food, fashion. Langston Hughes also writes about this in the poem I Too Sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen. When company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow, I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody will dare say to me, eat in the kitchen. Now, speaking on travel again, I remember when I was in Germany, and I was talking to a black Uber driver who was originally from Nigeria, and he was asking me where I was from, and I said I'm from the States, and he was asking me, like, oh, but where is your family from? Like, what's your heritage? And I said, my grandparents are from Jamaica, and he goes, oh, that's good, that's good. You have a connection to your roots, to your actual culture, or you have culture, something along those lines. And I really hate it when people say that, because to imply that Black Americans don't have culture is just simply false and makes literally no sense. I guess because it's rooted in slavery and we were, you know, taken from Africa and whatever, we don't have real culture, we don't know who we really are, but that's just not true. We know who we are as Black Americans. There's a deep, rich history. I really don't support the sentiment of, like, you don't know where you come from kind of thing. Especially because, I mean, Jamaica, Black people are not indigenous to Jamaica. They were slaves too. So it's just ridiculous that people say stuff like that. And to be frank, slavery doesn't erase culture. Black people weren't the only slaves in the history of the world. So I just think it's ridiculous that slavery just automatically cancels out the concept, the presence of culture. Look around you, babe. Black American culture is all around us, from America all the way to Asia. Those Asian folks didn't just start rapping in those K-pop songs out of nowhere, okay? Moving on. Some Black Americans lean more into reclaiming African identity rather than American identity and reject any sort of patriotism or claiming America the nation state. A lot of this comes from Garveyism, which is a political and racial ideology associated with Marcus Garvey, a Jamaican-born Black nationalist who advocates for Black self-determination, separation from white society, and the establishment of independent Black nations, particularly in Africa. Garveyism also emphasizes Pan-Africanism, promoting unity and pride among people of African descent.
Coon chip will activate. It only takes a little bit of white brainwash to activate the coon chip in the average Negro.
If it ain't nappy, I ain't happy. If I can't grab it, you can't have it.
Black queens forever. Snow bunnies never.
I'm not upset with y'all because I know you're mentally ill, which is why one day I'm going to open up a hospital for mentally ill Africans. I'm going to hospitalize you coons.
Is that a snow bunny? Good morning, Mrs. Lisa Crystal. How are you? We were having an all African people's live. Respectfully, find your way back to the snow.
And lastly, let's talk about Beyoncé and Kendrick Lamar, two mainstream Black artists who have really leaned into Americana aesthetics while also criticizing America. However, one artist seems to be getting more backlash than the other. Surprise, surprise, it's the woman. So Cowboy Carter was met with a lot of criticism from other Black Americans, mostly liberal, leftist Americans, labeling Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter as propaganda, from the album itself to her NFL performance during Christmas. And I think the use of propaganda is very interesting because propaganda obviously has a really horrible connotation, and rightfully so. But at the end of the day, it's really just crafting a narrative and spreading information. Propaganda can be defined as the spreading of ideas, information, or rumor for the purpose of helping or injuring an institution, a cause, or a person. Based on that definition, you could argue that propaganda can be used to harm or to promote a positive message. Propaganda can also be defined as information, especially of a biased or misleading nature, used to promote or publicize a particular political cause or point of view. So is Cowboy Carter propaganda? Maybe, but not in a pro-America, we should love America, end of story kind of way. I think if anything, it would be propaganda, like pro-Black propaganda, pro-Black American propaganda, and to create this narrative and to spread the idea that Black Americans have contributed a lot to this country culturally and deserve to take back what's ours. Beyoncé recently kicked off her Cowboy Carter tour, and she actually uses a lot of the same imagery and has similar messaging to Kendrick Lamar's halftime show performance. They both utilize the image of Uncle Sam, both being depicted by Black people. In Kendrick Lamar's performance, it was Samuel L. Jackson. And in Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter visuals, she is dressed up as Uncle Sam. Kendrick Lamar mentions the revolution and how it will be televised. Beyoncé also has a voiceover as well as text on a big screen that says the revolution will be live. And of course, in general, red, white, and blue, American flag imagery, etc. are utilized in both performances. When she performed Blackbird, there's images of Black female country musicians displayed behind her. Later on, she sings the Star Spangled Banner over Jimi Hendrix's rendition from 1967, while text behind her reads, "Never ask permission for something that belongs to you." And it transitions into her song Freedom, which is a song that is considered a, like, Black empowerment anthem that heavily criticizes America and the issues that persist for Black Americans. There's even a clip, there's like a short visual where she's standing in front of a collection of TVs dressed as Uncle Sam, and there's different news clips flashing. The word propaganda shows up, the word conform shows up, which to me symbolizes her criticism of propaganda in the United States, and maybe even addresses her thoughts on the idea that Cowboy Carter is propaganda. The idea that she's not conforming is causing these propaganda allegations, or at least that's kind of how I interpreted it. And you know, it's interesting, conservatives don't even consider Beyoncé a true patriot and have questioned if Cowboy Carter is anti-American.
So we know that she's not like a patriotic American, okay? We know that she hates conservative values, that she obviously campaigned with Kamala Harris. And I'm sorry, if you have truly patriotic values, you are not going to support Kamala Harris. You're just not.
No.
And so, like, what exactly is going on here?
The issue, I think, is that she sings the national anthem. Some people on X were like, I can't believe she would do that. They thought it was a patriotic thing because she's singing country music, kind of. But really what it was she cut off the national anthem partway through and started singing her song Freedom, which is known as a BLM anthem. It's with Kendrick Lamar. So she leads into that with the Star Spangled Banner. And so that is meant to be symbolic of, you know, this isn't actually patriotic. We have work to do.
Okay.
You know? America is in an interesting place right now due to the current administration. It's a mess over here, if you didn't already know. And so this era of reclamation is very interesting, especially right now, because although it would make sense to shy away from embracing anything American if you are not a conservative right winger, in a way it's also more important now than ever as Black Americans to reclaim America as our own. In this article, Marginalized Communities Are Embracing a Changing Americana Aesthetic, the author writes about this kind of shift in culture and the urgency around reclamation. America's current political climate shows the urgency of reclaiming Americana. It's rife with efforts to erase the country's history, particularly its harms against marginalized communities. The article highlights modern threats like schmancy salutes, mass deportation, rhetoric, and dismantling of DEI programs as signs of increasing exclusionary nationalism. The heart of the genre must be returned to the communities that built it, so that their stories and the realities of those stories are finally given the platform they deserve. Like I mentioned earlier with the collection of Americana memorabilia, it is important to address this history and to not let it die or be whitewashed, because it will be repeated again if we don't do that. And we're already in a mess of repeating history right now. So in telling these stories and embracing this side of our culture, we are combating historical revisionism. And I believe that is an act of resistance. It's more than just the aesthetics. It's more than just throwing on a pair of cowboy boots and going, yeehaw. It's reshaping a narrative. The author says, if the reclamation of country and Americana music stops at aesthetics, then it will have been a missed opportunity. And I couldn't agree more.